Hey guys, and welcome back to an episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. Woohoo! I got it right.
Yes.
All right. Now, today, guys, we have, of course, our top five of this week. Really good books, some not so great books. So it's really hard. It's really hard because, for one, the really cool thing this week is we got three Batman books.
This is very, very Batman heavy. I like it.
So, which is not something we get every single week, you know, or every single month. You know, usually Detective and Batman are both rotating, but because DC had waited until May 27th for the Detective 1000, which is respectable because it came out on that same, it was the issue 27 that Batman came out on officially for Detective. So, respectively, it's pretty cool that they waited until May 27th. I completely agree with that decision, but because of it, we get these three books. So, let's jump into it. Well, first, Mark, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
I completely jumped into this and was ready to go.
Bro, you're excited. It's all good. I love it. This lets me know that you were so happy to just talk comic books that you completely forgot that you're looking at me. I get it. It's all good. man. I'm doing good. I'm kind of in like a, it's kind of nuts because right now my mind is like, okay, I have like podcast geeky time. Then I got like comicbooklegion.com. That's a shameless plug for our website, you know, just working with all our awesome writers. So, you know, doing that, doing some back behind the scenes stuff. But then it's also, I'm like house hunting. So I'm doing like all this kind of stuff and I'm like in hockey with my son and I'm a baseball coach. So my time is like all over the place. I'm very scattered. Very little time for my PS4. I'm very sorry. Like, I have to apologize to my PS4 every time I see it. Because all I want to do is play MLB The Show.
Mark, I'm going to one day just, like, open up this call, and you're just going to have a head full of white hair. Or no hair at all.
Oh, dude. No, I'm kind of, well, I was going to do, like, a Bible reference. But I'm kind of doing, like, a Red Sea over here. Where I feel like my hair is like splitting in the inside. I'm like, no, I'm losing a lot of. No, this is bad, man.
Oh,
I think it's, I wear too many baseball hats. So I think, you know, that myth that they always say that baseball players always have like that natural yarmulke on the back just because of lack of oxygen. I'm starting to feel it. Luckily, I'm 6'5", so not many people can see the top of my head. but no, dude, I'm running on a high because of all this awesome deceased stuff that's been, all these little teasers.
Oh my god!
Between these covers, like I've been telling my wife, I'm like, babe, you know, because you know, I've been kind of doing a half digital, half physical, just because. I mean, I know what it's like having 10,000 plus comic books in a room, and I don't want my wife to leave me again if I start going on this rabbit hole. So what I've been doing is I'm going a lot digital, but I'm buying pretty much every cover that I love. And right now, DC, it just seems like every B cover is absolutely gorgeous. So then you get like Detective Comics 1000. And I mean, you showed us your collection where I think you have them all except the one. Are you going to be getting the retailer exclusive ones also?
For deceased?
Well, for like Detective.
Oh, Detective. I don't know which all that I grabbed. I know that majority of the stuff that I grabbed was mainly exclusives to other stores is the ones that I grabbed.
Oh, okay.
I didn't grab the retail ones. I actually didn't really look at the retail exclusives.
I mean, I think from the retail exclusives, I mean, they had a really nice Bruce Timm one with like the Joker kind of like overhanging, but it's very like animated universe kind of style, but in the 40s.
Oh, no. Yeah. That was one of the normal covers.
Yeah. One of the norm, but I'm talking about like, for example, like I chose the, like the Francisco Matina. Like the Midtown.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
I was just curious. Are you planning on doing all the retail ones and the exclusive ones? Is that your goal?
Yeah. Eventually, I will get all of the retail ones because I spent a pretty penny on all the other ones. I kind of waited for the retail covers. But I did grab three to start off with on the retail. I grabbed the Bruce Timm 40s.
Okay.
The regular A cover, Jim Lee
cover,
the wraparound cover. Mm-hmm. And then I got the Greg Capullo.
I got the Capullo.
The 2010
cover. Yeah, I got the 40, the Tim. I got the Capullo. I have, I think it's, I want to say it's the 50s. I think it's like All Red, where you just see a whole bunch of like different versions of the Batman, but it's like the...
Oh, yes.
Yes, I believe it's All Red. Then, yeah, I got the Mateina exclusive. I didn't even get the A cover. I got the Alex Ross and the Mike Mayhew. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Those were the ones I got.
I got the Mike Mayhew.
Yeah.
I got the Mike Mayhew. I got the one that I wanted so badly was the Alex Ross cover.
Yes. Yeah. Luckily, my store owner, since he knows me, he knew I really wanted it. So he pulled a couple of, I guess, local comic book store owner, like, deals, and he was able to get it for me. I was like, awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that email, because I put myself on a waiting list for when those become available. So I put my email out there, and hopefully they'll become available soon so I can grab one. So.
Okay. So, yeah, in regards to deceased, I keep on telling myself, like, man, I got to stop spending my money on just covers, because I'm buying like three of the same books, but it's just a different cover. But the thing is that these covers are so gorgeous that the sneak peek came in and we saw the little 5-page preview that we got from DC, which was awesome. Because, like, what a cool way in regards to getting the anti-life equation, but it's going to be happening through social media, which is something that the whole world is just absolutely connected to. It's genius. Well, I mean, it is Tom Taylor, so.
Well, yeah, like, and for Tom Taylor to have that much range, right now he is writing Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, and he's written X-23. Of course, famously, he has written Injustice 2. Those, Injustice 2, X-23, both a little bit on the darker side. Mm-hmm. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is what it is. Very friendly. It's very Spider-Man. You know, something you would expect a Spider-Man book to be.
And he was great on Green Lantern Corps.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And then for, you know, him to take a complete 180 and do something like this, I would have never expected it.
No. And that I think that's what's great about not only him as a writer, but I'm excited because Marvel Zombies – number one was awesome. I thought it was great. I loved it. I loved the art that was in there. It's very grotesque. It's beautiful. I mean, the other ones, I don't talk about the other ones. But in regards to this, I'm really excited to see this because, I mean, I love this. You know, you would think as someone who loves The Walking Dead, I would just get tired of reading these kind of stories. But I don't. And it's just the fact that it's not like canon, I feel like it's no hold bar. So you can just, you'd have no idea. And this gives them a chance to feature some characters that, you know, you don't normally see. Like, I think it was one of the covers, or I don't know if it was in the preview, where you see, like, Superman fighting Power Girl. Dude, I haven't seen Power Girl in forever, you know?
Yeah, for
like,
real.
Like, those are the things that I'm excited, because I feel like we're going to get a lot of cool nods on some characters that we've seen. And I will be honest with you, I do hope that this story kind of features a little bit more of the B characters, C characters. Not exactly like Earth 2, where Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman were just killed in the first issue by Steppenwolf. But I'm kind of hoping that you still see them, but they're not like a main focus. I wish that there's a lot of smaller stories in regards to what they're dealing with in regards to this virus. So I dig it. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm super, super excited for it. You know, I also was looking at the covers. You know that I just recently purchased a swipe cover of the Batman Adventures of the very first appearance of Harley Quinn, which is really cool because in this deceased cover, they swapped Batgirl and Harley. You know, so it's Harley in the front with her baseball bat. And behind her is Poison Ivy and Batgirl kind of like clawing at her. So it looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
I've seen some other ones that have just recently came out like yesterday. And those are insane. I can't remember the artist, but there's one where it's Joker. And his hair looks really frayed. His, you know, it's a really big close up on his eye. But you can see his entire head.
Yeah, I'm gonna need you to send that to me. I mean, yesterday was another house hunting kind of thing, so I haven't been on social media that much the last couple days. But I definitely want to see those because I'm kind of like writing a list of which are the covers that I want to go after.
Yeah, for sure. I'll send it to you. I think Tom Taylor actually retweeted that one. But let's go ahead and jump into
this. Let's do it, man.
Of course, the first book we will be talking about was not our favorite, I will say. There's some things that I like. There's some things that I definitely don't like. And that is Batman 68.
Oh,
written by, of course, Tom King. The art was by Amanda Connor. Where is that credits page?
Oh, it's all the way at the end. I mean, I got you here. I mean, you got Amanda Connor, Dan Panisian, John Timms, and Mikhail Janin are all artists, like on certain things. Okay, and then with colors, you have Paul Mounce, John Timms, and Jordi Belair.
There we go. Yes.
Yeah, so quite a bit.
Quite a bit. And this is the quote-unquote unofficial sequel to that famous Date Night issue, or two issues.
But worse.
That that Tom King had written, I think it was like issue 32, like 34 and 35.
Yeah, it was in the 30s.
So here, of course, we are still in the Nightmare arc. So spoilers, this is a nightmare. But we jump in with both Lois Lane and Catwoman going into the Fortress of Solitude with Supergirl's help. And let me tell you this. I enjoy Amanda Connor's art. I like it. I like it for certain books. I can tell you right now, Tom King's writing with Amanda Connor's art does not make any sense to me.
Yeah, I think I think with an issue like this, just because I think he was trying to make things light, because in this issue it just felt like a really fun issue going on, and then it kind of felt like maybe the last two pages is when Tom King tried to get serious. But it was kind of, with the art, I can see, these are one of those where I feel like it would have been perfect to have like two different artists, where I can see Amanda Connor doing a great job with Lois and Selina in the fortress with their bachelorette party. Because it would feel more kind of like the, what's that movie called? Like Bad Moms? Like, It felt like that, where I can kind of see the vibe there. The other stuff, I mean, I don't know. But honestly, with this one here, I think that Amanda Connor's art is not the issue with this book. This book was, I mean, I know that I'm a Tom King apologist because I really love his work. It's really hard to defend this one because this doesn't feel like a nightmare. It doesn't feel like anything. It's just, it feels like, let's just create an easy story where it could be a little fun. I need time to work on my bigger stuff. I need to work on the Thomas Wayne. I need to do all that kind of stuff. And this here is, because I think he even mentioned it like on Twitter, it's like after the nightmare, it's the fall. And I think I think Thomas Wayne's going to appear in issue 69, which he'll probably just show up in the last panel and then you don't see him again. But that's, I don't know, this one was really, like, the characterizations between Bruce and Clark annoyed me.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of see Lois as a mom, maybe not so exaggerated, but I can kind of see like where there's just moms or like that are, you know, dealing with kids. In her circumstance, she's dealing with superheroes, so she has seen crap where she just wants to have one freaking awesome day.
Well, yeah, in this issue, she says, you know, when I get home, I have to be a mom, and then I have to
be a journalist.
Be a journalist, and then I have to be a wife, and then I have to go to sleep, and then when I wake up, I have to be a journalist, and then I have to be a wife, and then I have to be a mom, and she goes on and on and on and on, and she's like, I just want to relax.
Yeah, so
and
that
so
made sense.
I totally understand that. But just the way they perceived it in this book,
it was a little over exaggerated, and I guess Tom can always use the you know, he has behind him saying like you got to remember this isn't real, it's a nightmare, so we can we can use that to exaggerate things a little bit, but it was honestly like the characterization between Superman and Clark and Bruce. That's the one where there was a lot of I'm like, no, these guys know how to speak to each other.
I was going to say, like, for me, I understand that this is a nightmare for Batman, but Batman still knows who Clark is. So having him be very stuttery, very awkward, that's not who Batman sees Clark as. So I don't know why he would see him that way in a nightmare.
Yeah, and I think it was Kevin. I don't know if it was Kevin or Comics Dude on our Comic Book Legion chat, where he was mentioning that, you know, what he liked, it was kind of like, well, I mean, they're awkward because Batman knows that he should be in the streets. You know, like, this is not, he's not here to have, like, dinner and stuff like that. But, I mean, we've seen it with past episodes. These guys are best friends. Yes, their relationship can be, it's different and it's a contrast, but it's not where they don't know how to speak to each other. And I think, like, that's the part that made it a little weird. Like, it was just like, okay, so it just bothers me that this is part of, like, the main canon of, like, what's happening. It just didn't feel like a nightmare. And then when Clark is trying to introduce, no, you're being pinned down, this is the nightmare, and this is not real, I was like, dude, it felt, like, really quick. Like, you can either get the creepiness from Naomi that the dad's like, come, you can trust me. You can get something weird like that, or it's going to be, like, Clark is just hitting you at a million miles an hour saying that this is not real, and then you see what predicament he's in.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for
so
sure.
I don't know. It just, it felt like a, it was it a fun book? Sure. I mean, there's little giggles, like seeing Lois and Selina looking at, like, three stripper Clarks, which is kind of weird if you think about it. Like she's like, Lois is straight up okay seeing, like, Selina the way she's looking at, like, what her husband actually looks like. Like, it's weird, but whatever. Yeah. I understand the over-exaggeration in terms of fun that they're trying to portray, like a girls' night out kind of thing. The other stuff, I don't know. But, I mean, at least at the end, it kind of shows you what kind of predicament Batman's in. So, yeah. I mean, it kind of got me like, oh, okay, you know, he looks like he's in a really rough spot. Okay, so let's get to the last part. Let's get to issue 69 and see what's going on. That's kind of like where I'm at with nightmares.
Well, and what we see here at the very end, you know, we see that the bachelorette party and the bachelor party end, Bruce and Clark go to the fortress. You know, they're all meeting up again, and it cuts to real life, or what we assume is real life. Because we see Batman hooked up to this giant machine, and you see him kind of screaming. So we see there that, okay, we are finally getting to the end of these nightmares. We are going to move forward, and let's see what's coming up next.
Well, this connects with when he saw John Constantine, and Constantine said that you were being strapped to a table, and they're just having you relive horror after horror after horror, until you pretty much drive yourself mad and you die. So, I mean, this last panel at least connects to that issue, which was, I believe was part 2 or part 3 of Nightmares.
I think it was part... Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I think it was 2 or 3.
I think it was 2.
Okay, so yeah, it was probably 2. So, I mean, the end gets me a little bit excited, so I'm like, okay, well, we're finally going to get a conclusion. But, I mean, this was... I kind of figured that we were going to have a really odd book when you just saw the front cover. I mean, even though I bought the Matina, the B cover, but I mean, when I'm looking at the first one, I'm like, oh dear, it's going to be one of those books.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, when you see Amanda Connor, I guess you would figure, okay, this, you know, she's like primarily on Harley Quinn. So you know that there's going to be like some type of a Harley Quinn-esque feel or tone to it.
Overall.
Yeah. So, it wasn't a great start, since Batman's usually the first book that I read when I know it's coming out. So a little bit bummed out when I saw that, but I was not bummed out when I saw The Batman Who Laughs.
Yes, that was such a great book. We will get to it because I have a lot of things to say about the Batman Who Laughs just recently because, spoilers, I have read Black Mirror now. So there was a lot of things connecting to it. So we'll get to it. We'll get to it. So next, talk about, you know, a better book, of course. I will say this. Walker's art on Detective Comics is a breath of fresh air. I absolutely love it. I did not hate on Gleason at all prior to this. Gleason, of course, a great artist. Love him on Young Justice as well. But just the way he draws Batman, Walker does, this issue was just really, really cool. So in here was really messed up because we see that there is a extermination of sorts with bats in Gotham.
Yep.
You know, we see Gordon and his other officers at the, what is it, the, is it at the zoo or is it at the aviary?
I'm assuming I can't remember. At the aviary. Because I think, I think Bruce was at the aviary. I think that's where, yeah, because I think he met, because, well, he was at the Batcave, but then I know that he ended up meeting. So I would say to be safe, we can just say it was at the, because I don't think it was at a zoo.
Okay. So that also, well, actually, when you look at the panel, it actually looks like it's just in the middle of a park.
Actually, you know what? You're right. It looks like a slide, so they're probably just in the playground.
Yeah. So you see all these dead bats. And, of course, Gordon's like, oh, well, there's kind of a person that I need to call, that person being Batman. And even Batman in the Batcave. And, you know, the bats all in the Batcave, all dead, of course, just like how it was in the park with Gordon. And they're having a conversation about it. And, you know, Bruce is, you know, dissecting the bat, seeing what's going on. But he has an idea of who might be able to help him out. So he goes to, what is her name?
Francine Langstrom.
Francine Langstrom. So I'm not very big into the Batman lore. So I'm not sure. Was this his wife or his daughter?
Francine? I believe it's his wife.
Okay, cool. So Francine is doing research just like Langstrom was, Dr. Langstrom. And the first panel that we really see, have a good look at her, she's like sweating. Something is going on with her. You can very much tell that she is in some way involving herself the same way that Langstrom did with him, you know, with the serum and everything else. And to better understand the bats, that's what she does. She grabs that serum, injects herself, and immediately turns into, I would guess, woman.
No, they
bat?
Call her She-Bat.
Not man.
She-Bat.
She-Bat?
Yeah,
the
last time that I saw Francine, I remember she was like, I believe it was engaged. But the thing is, like, you know, there's so many, with all these retcons and so many things happening with DC the past 10 years, I don't even know. So I'm like, I guess she's the wife, but I at least know her as fiance. But I believe they did get married. But yeah, this moment, I thought, I mean, it was nice to see because, you know, you kind of see what's going on with Kirk right now in Justice League Dark, and he's doing his thing. So it's kind of, in a way, it's a nice way where, you know, possibly Tomasi wanted to use this character because, I mean, this is pretty much the perfect character to kind of figure out what's going on here. And, you know, you can't use him because then, you know, that might give some kind of continuity issues with what's going on with Justice League Dark. So I thought it was really cool that they ended up using Francine. And I mean, I would say that seeing her, the transformation, I really love the transformation. You can see, and this is the thing that I really like about art, and I know that you mentioned it with the way that he draws Batman. I love the facial expressions. You can kind of see how, in a way, you can kind of see, like, Batman when he's there holding on to Francine, that he looks really scared and, like, worried about what she's going to do, because either she's going to hurt herself or there's going to be a lot of damage going on. But I mean, clearly she's going through something because she can just sense all the pain, all the fear of like pretty much all the bats crying, and she goes straight to the aviary. That's where she ended up going. I think that's why we were getting confused on on like who was where. But then, dude, that must have been absolutely petrifying with Batman. You know, he's there, he's helping out Francine, and there's this huge boom of light that's coming.
And that's all it is. It's not even like an explosion.
No, I think, didn't they call it like a second sun? Like a small sun just came over Gotham?
Yeah, because he calls in to Alfred and says, hey, you know, assess the damage with that explosion, blah, blah, blah. And Alfred said, well, there wasn't any. It's just pure light. It's a second sun. And that's when kind of, you know, stuff starts hitting the fan here.
Yes.
And we see these knights. I forgot what they called themselves. I believe it was at the beginning. That was one part that I skipped because I wanted, you know, to show it here at the very end. This is actually a second look because we saw in Detective 1000 at the very end. But this is our second appearance of the Arkham Knight here in Detective Comics. His band of brothers here, they are wanting to bring light to Gotham. You know, they're in a weird way, they think that whatever justice that they're going to put onto Gotham, whether it be with its villains, with Batman, whatever, they're going to do it for the greater good of
Gotham. It kind of feels like they're turning Arkham Knight, you know, because Arkham Knight was a, in like at least a video game, you know, you could tell that he was just very vengeful.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it kind of feels that the Arkham Knight feels more like Azrael than Azrael feels like Azrael.
Yeah, right now anyway. Yeah,
Sure. At least in this first issue. But I liked it, man, because I enjoyed the fact that these knights, you know, Batman, well, of course, Batman can usually use the darkness as, you know, darkness is his ally, to quote Bane. And you're in this moment, you're just seeing where now he's in light, so he's just completely in view. But no matter what, it seems like all the tech that Batman does have, the arrows don't stop him because the arrows are piercing through his armor. Everything is hurting him. So
yeah.
I'm kind of, in a way, I know it's comic booky, but dude, he was hit by way too many arrows to be moving as good as he was moving. I mean, even Leonidas in 300, I mean, there's only so many arrows that you can take because he had, I mean, I think in one arm, if I'm looking at a picture right now, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He has 7 arrows in his left arm, and he was able to throw a perfect strike, like a smoke grenade, at the Arkham Knight. I'm like, dude, that's all sorts of like badassery. But I understand, you know, Batman, he gets a little OP sometimes, and you know he can kind of withstand this. But it's comic books. But I was like, dang, come on, 7 arrows to an arm.
One thing that I actually like about that is he's trying to throw it at the knights. He's not throwing it at the Arkham Knight. The Arkham Knight is the one that kind of rushes in and hits it back to Batman.
Okay, well then that could maybe just be, maybe that could be what it is, that he kind of just swooped in and stopped it. But I'm like, dang, because, I mean, you're right, because I didn't see the Arkham Knight. Now when I'm looking at the background, it just shows his knight. So clearly he was just turning around to toss it. But the Arkham Knight ended up stepping in. But even so, I mean, him just being able to throw it.
And I will say this. In the video game of Arkham Knight, the character design of Arkham Knight is awesome. I love him here. He is a little bit more blue than I expected and what I've seen in the video game. But, like, his shield, if you look at it, it's the letter A, just like the emblem right under like his abdomen or whatever. Like,
no, yeah, yeah, it looks really good.
So I really like the character design here,
and it does look very medieval, kind of like what the first page says. So I kind of like the route that they're taking it. I mean, I'm really curious on who it is, but at this moment, I thought it was really good, and honestly, one of my favorite things that I liked about that last page, you know, you're mentioning Arkham Knight and you're fully seeing his design. What I actually really liked is when I saw Batman, I don't know what is it with me and Batman's shoulder, but I liked the fact that they actually took the time that you can see the rip in his suit and you actually see the armor that he has under the suit.
Yes.
I thought that was a really, yes. I thought that that was a really cool, like little attention to detail that I mean, I appreciate. I thought that that was really cool. So when I saw that, I'm like, all right. Yeah. I dig that. I thought that was a really cool move by Brad Walker. And yeah, I mean, I missed him on Aquaman. Seeing Aquaman, and I'm like, man, Brad Walker, because this guy was Rebirth for the first, I don't know, 15, 20 issues. Him and, like, Philip Briones. So seeing him again and now kind of jumping in here, I thought it was really, really nice to see.
Yeah, for sure. Really, really enjoyed this issue. A lot better than I did Batman, for sure. But let's step away from the Bat family a little bit.
Do it.
I really, really enjoyed Hawkman.
Hawkman is, I'm trying to think, like, if I, you know, like those baseball players or it's like a football player, there's just somebody, I mean, I'll show my Homer here, but like a Julian Edelman. Hawkman is like the Julian Edelman where he's small in terms of his sales, he's scrappy, but he is so vital and he's so important to the team. Hawkman is like one of those guys that not too many people are paying attention to, and it's an absolute shame. Like when you're looking at wide receivers, you see all these names, but Brady's not Brady without Edelman. For me, when I see Hawkman, I'm like, dude, this is, it's actually a shame that this book might get canceled because people are not buying it. And it's probably since issue 1 to 11, consistently one of the strongest 11 issues in comics. Especially in DC.
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, I kept on saying, for the longest time, I was actually reviewing this online, and like around issue 6, I was like, man, I love this. I hate for it to be a 6-issue miniseries. And then issue 7 came out, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And the same thing, you know, when it hit issue 10, and 9 and 10, and I was like, okay, it's going to end at 12. But then we get the solicits, and we know, oh, man, it's going further than this.
Yeah.
And for me, that scares me just a little bit. And the reason why, the grand scale of this story is so big that I don't know what could top it, you know? I don't know what other story Vendetti has. And I'm not doubting his writing skills. I'm not doubting the plans that he has for Hawkman. It's just he definitely took the premise of go big or go home for this first story.
Yeah, well, I mean, that might just be what this is. I mean, it could be where this story, it might not have a long lifespan. I mean, but that's okay. I mean, we are issue 11. I know issue 12 is not going to be the last one, like as you mentioned with the solicits, but I can kind of see this where maybe it's just a 24 issue arc. If it doesn't hit the shelf before that. But yeah, you're definitely right, because seeing pretty much the Hawkmen versus the Deathbringers, this is what Brian Hitch was created for. These kind of, all these pages is just absolute bombastic. I mean, Brian Hitch is one of the best artists when it comes to the big splash pages. He loves his double spreads. Like, that's like, that's, I think, is like his signature. And I gotta say, normally you would see in these kind of big stories, you see a lot of the art being detailed in the back. And then in the front, like the front main two characters. And then the back kind of takes a little, I mean, there's detail there, but he kind of like just lays off so that he can have more time. No, Brian Hitch put a lot of work into these books. And I got to give him credit for that, because I mean, for those who have followed the podcast, I'm not the biggest fan of Brian Hitch, because I feel like he's ruined Justice League during Rebirth. But I am so happy to see what he's doing. And I would actually be bummed if I didn't see him on this book, because I feel like now when I think of Hawkman, I think of Brian Hitch's look.
Yeah,
and I just can't picture another look for Hawkman, at least right now. But what did you think?
This story, you know, especially with issue 11, I thought it was awesome because of one Easter egg that was in this book that we had not seen yet with his different reincarnations. So we see everyone that we had seen before. We see the Kryptonian. We see the Thanagarian. We see the cowboy from the, you know, the Old West.
Oh, my God.
Right after we see that.
Oh, my gosh. The Silent Knight? Are you talking about Silent Knight of Britain? Yeah. That he's, like, jousting?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that. I love that one.
We see that one as well. But right after the, what's his name? Nighthawk. We see the Dragon of Barbados.
Dude, I was like, whoa, whoa, what is happening here? That was nice.
Yeah. So to see him working with all the Hawkmen to fight the Deathbringers, that was awesome. It got me excited. But the unfortunate thing is, what is his name?
I'm going to say it's like, I know it's not Adam because it's with an A, so it could be like Edom.
Yes, Edom.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You know, Edom has, you know, basically planned for all this. You know, mm-hmm. He said, hey, for every life that you have lived, I have spent thinking of my revenge. And, you know, there's a big, you know, fist fight on the floor, and he says, hey, you know what? Let's forget all of our other people. Let's just me and you right now, you know, let's have this. And Hawkman Carter, Carter stabs him right in the chest. And we think that the issue is over. I thought the issue was over. I was like, okay, cool.
Well, even leading to that, I thought it was really nice because he was still considering him like, I'm going to destroy you, Qatar. And he's like, you have no idea. With everything that I've been through, the regret, but you don't understand that all this darkness brought me to good. And he's like, I'm not Qatar anymore. I am Carter. I am Hawkman. So I love that kind of where you're always seeing these moments with Hawkman that he's like, he doesn't know who he is. He's trying to find himself. And that's what so many people were being annoyed with Hawkman. Like, dude, figure out your freaking origin. But that's I love what Venditti has done here is not only has he given us the origin, but he's also given Hawkman this moment where he's like, no, I know my place. I know who I am. And I thought that was cool. Yeah. And yes, when you see him impale Edom, I was like, oh, okay. Like now the story, now I'm like, okay, well, now I hit that moment. And now I got to kind of see like, how are things going to slow down? I figured there was going to be like a triumphant moment where he was going to call all of his incarnations and all these Hawkmen to take down the Deathbringers. Like, you were going to get another awesome moment. But no, Edom's like, ouch, you know, that hurts. And he just pulls.
Yeah, and he just, like, takes out the blade from his chest, and he beats down Carter. And we get small glimpses of the Deathbringers taking down the other reincarnations. We see the Dragon of Barbados fall to his back, and Edom says, you know, the destruction of Earth will begin, and it'll begin with this city. And we see the Deathbringers about to fire whatever they have, what kind of weapon they have, onto the city. And that's the end. We see pretty much all the reincarnations basically say, oh my God, in their language.
Yes.
Whether it be like, I think the Kryptonian says something about,
he's like Rao above.
Rao. And,
or Horus, we call for aid. Spirits of, what is it? Spirits of Samarkand, seven hells, and then God help us all.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. So we're not there yet. We know that, you know, issue 12 is going to be the end of this first arc. And I can't wait, dude. I am loving this book. Venditti, for me, I got introduced to Venditti really with this book as far as following it so hardcore, but I know he's been on things like the Exo Manowar for Valiant. He has also done
Green Lantern and The Flash for New 52.
Yeah. So I'm on my little journey of finishing New 52 stuff. I just finished the first 20 issues of Batman New 52. I'm going to finish that, then start going into the other characters. So Green Lantern and Flash are definitely on my list, for sure. But he has done an excellent job with Hawkman. Just especially because, like you had said, Hawkman is a character that everybody just sleeps on.
Yeah.
And from, you know, my small introduction to Hawkman in the New 52, the Savage Hawkman, it didn't last very long.
Mm-mm.
I think it was one of the first titles to be canceled,
dude, unfortunately. Even Geoff Johns, all the magic that he's done in this prime, was only able to give Hawkman, I think, like 20 issues, give or take.
And I'm hoping that this story is actually one of those that, like, sleeps for a little bit. Like, and I know I don't want it to sleep for a little bit, but for the best kind of outcome, I hope that after issue 12, a lot of people just love the way this is. It gets put into a, whatchamacallit, a trade or a complete set for that story, and a movie gets announced. And then people are like, oh, they're going to bring in the Deathbringers. And that's when people start to love Hawkman, and that boosts up his sales, that brings in another wave of Hawkman stories.
I think that Hawkman would be an amazing movie.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, and they have the perfect blueprint with this. Like, this story is the perfect blueprint. Because he's got, from not knowing who he is from a time, but you can see how who he was, where he was just responsible of just killing people. You already know who the enemy is going to be, which will be Idam, which was his general that he ends up betraying. And then he turns to good. Sure, you can kind of maybe introduce, like, Shayara and try to figure out, you know, how that's going to work. Because, you know, of course there's going to be a love interest there some way. But you got that. You got then Idam pretty much comes back later on. I mean, you got it, man. Just the with him and Idam, when they were still feeding the Deathbringers, that can be pretty much like a Man of Steel, the Krypton scene. And then you got little by little, you got Idam pretty much figuring out, you know, trying to get back to fight Carter, to confront him. It might not be all different forms of his reincarnations, because, I mean, leave that for like a trilogy. But this here has a huge potential to be an awesome movie.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
I'm with you, bro. You got me excited. Warner Brothers. Come on.
Exactly. Hey, Warner Brothers, if you ever need the script of a Hawkman
movie. I mean, you literally have it in your database. Just check your emails.
Hey.
but dude, so I'm figuring the way that you're kind of going, I think you want to leave Batman for last, because that one has a lot to unpack here. So Superman, this is just the continuing par Superman 10, Brian Bendis, Ivan Reis, Joe Prado, Alex Sinclair on colors. Looking at this book, I was kind of getting a little excited because I was really interested in regards to, all right, Jonathan's back. Because the Unity Saga to me has been much slower than what's going on in Action Comics. And now you got the Leviathan. So I'm kind of like, okay, Jonathan's back. The last issue ended when he's mentioning, all right, Dad, Grandpa's crazy. We need to stop him. And now we're kind of figuring out the journey. And the journey is he ended up leaving the grasp of his grandfather. And now he's pretty much being hunted, where I was like, okay, I mean, what's going on here? And he's like, come here, little Superboy. You find out that he's pretty much being chased by an alternate version of his mother. And this is his mother's superpower. She's evil. She's crazy. Wants to kill him. And you have Lois is, you know, the real Lois that we know of. She just feels horrible. And she's like, oh, my poor baby, I tried to kill you. She's like, Mom, it's okay. And they're like, no, it's definitely not okay. And throughout this entire time, when it looked like the Lois was about to do, like, her final blow, this is when she ends up getting, well, when Jonathan ends up getting saved by Mr. Oz, or, you know,
Jor-El,
if you want to think that, I mean, I still hope it's not him, because I feel like this is ruining everything. But anyways, if it is, you're seeing Jor-El, and even Jonathan mentions it, because when I looked at it, I was like, wow, Jor-El, he looks different. Well, he's aged. And I feel that you're kind of figuring things out little by little, and Jor-El has been searching for Jonathan, but he's like, you left. And he's like, I did? Because for Jonathan, it felt like this was nothing. He's like, what do you mean? What do you mean I left you? I didn't leave you. And then you end up finding out, and it's kind of funny because he didn't even notice. Like, he didn't realize that he aged. It just happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what a crummy feeling, because then you got Jor-El mentioning what ended up happening to him with him getting into, like, the portal, and, you know, with time, things get really crazy. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the ramifications on what this is going to do. Because in a way, I guess you can think that, yes, you're bringing Jonathan, but this has to mess with you one way or another, sooner or later, that you've pretty much have lost 7 years of your life, and it didn't even you didn't even feel it.
Well, no, because here, this is the thing that I'm confused by, because, you know, Jor-El, when they finally get back, you know, and Jor-El is kind of freaking out, he's yelling at John, and John is like, I don't understand, why are you so mad? Like, you found me, and we're okay now. And he's like, okay, well, how long has it been? How long has it been? And Jor-El says that you were thrown through time, John, many earth years, and stayed and grew and changed, and now you have caught up to today. And so, oh, well, is it John that says that he feels like it's only been 3 weeks? Is that what it says?
Well, I mean, he kind of goes like, 3 weeks? He's like, I've only been gone for 3 weeks? Like, I think it was kind of like that thing. Like, I guess he just couldn't understand, because, again, I mean, if he doesn't know in terms of, you know, time and relativity and all that kind of stuff, I guess, you know, it can feel very confusing that it's, you know, he was gone for only 3 weeks, but he's aged, you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
7 years, yeah. Or whatever it was. So I don't know, man. Sometimes I feel like, man, is Bendis going to do something where he's going to have, like, where Jonathan's going to, you know, kind of, like, go mad? You know?
See, and a lot of people, so I recently, I'm going to plug another podcast that I think other people should definitely listen to, the Word Balloon podcast. I don't know if you've heard of it at all.
Yeah, John, right?
Bendis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bendis just recently did a interview and talked a little bit about this, and they were purposely playing with a lot of the covers here on these issues. So we see with this issue, we see Jor-El fighting Superman. Last issue, we saw Superman and John surrounded by the oh my god, I already forgot their name. The evil Justice League.
The Crime Syndicate?
The Crime Syndicate. And then the issue before that, we saw John getting really angry with red heat vision, you know, just smoking throughout his eyes. So they did that on purpose to push sales. And I know that it's kind of a wrong thing to do, but they did it very purposely, because I think Bendis wants that idea in your head. Oh, they think that I'm going to make John evil, blah, 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 blah. And I don't think that's his intentions, but I don't know, with his idea of how John is going to be in this book, along with Young Justice being, according to him, a part of continuity. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have two Superboys. And usually when there's two Superboys, either one, or when there's more than one character with that name, you know, for example, Robin, and I think there was also, you know, the Power Girl, Supergirl thing.
Yeah.
But for example, with that, is that one usually changes their name. And I think DC is going to be forced to do that with these two characters. But who is to say who gets that name, you know?
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, I'm not even thinking that he's going to be going mad because the first cover, when they were kind of teasing his reappearance. I'm thinking of it in the sense that now when you realize what he went through, I can only assume that he might have a lot of questions. But you know what? I understand that this is me going more straw man, just because I really just want to see Superboy Prime back. And it would be kind of insane to see if it was like Jonathan kind of became like, I mean, I don't want it to happen because I don't want the Kent family to go, you know, because even in, I think it was in this issue, like, Lois was kind of, like, even though she kind of said it jokingly, she's like, I blame you for this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't really, but you never know. Sometimes you can joke, but there's a small part of you that believes it. And I don't, and I don't want it to be where it's going to, like, whatever happened with Jonathan's going to, you know, potentially hurt the Kent family. But it...
Oh, and I think it will, though. I think it definitely will. You know, we've already seen Clark kind of think about the fact that his son has grown so much he never got to see him grow. That's going to eat at him. I think it'll eat at him. I think it'll eat at Lois. I think in small ways this is going to affect the Superman
family.
Oh,
no, it would affect it. I'm trying to do it in the sense where I wouldn't want it to be where something happens to Jonathan because of the ramifications of losing pretty much 7 years, and he goes mad, and now you're having like a Thomas Martha like in Flashpoint, where they just can't stand the sight of each other, because, I mean, you never know. I mean, you know how comics are, and I understand, you know, a lot of people are like the way they are with right now with Aquaman, that they hate Andy, Dick Grayson with Rick. It's just, I guess it's one of those things, because in New 52, Superman and Lois was not a thing, that it was so long I didn't have it, where as a, you know, a fan of Superman, I don't want to see the Kent family, like, separated again. Even though, you know, status quo can always bring them back together, I just don't want to see it because I haven't had it for that much. And then, you know, you never know what Bendis is doing, with Bendis kind of in earlier issues mentioning how she kind of feels like she needs time for her, and, you know, they were kind of talking about like having more of an open relationship, and I was like, what are you doing? So it's like those kind of things. It just gets me more worried that I don't know if those are just small little Easter eggs to lead to something bigger later on.
Yeah, true, true.
That's just my fear. But overall, I mean, it was a good issue, like average, it was a good Superman comic.
But there's some things that I question. You know, we finally get back to Superman, Lois, and John, you know, having that conversation in the Fortress of Solitude, and Superman's like, okay, you know, we have to confront Jor-El. We have to figure out what's going on with him. I don't know how they explain this, but apparently John's suit can teleport people. I was very confused by that. And I think also he was at one point. I think it says, like, he... where is
Well, I mean, when they're booming up and he's like, Dad? He's like, dude, just hold on. And he's like, oh, I didn't know what Grandpa meant when he meant by, but it's like, it kind of stops. And that's when Clark is like, he's like, wherever we go, just stay near me.
Yeah. And that's where this giant splash page comes in. For some reason, the Millennium Falcon is in here, and it's just this all-out war. We see Thanagarians. We see other aliens. So this is the Unity Saga, the House of El, Part 4. And I'm sure... Oh, that's what this issue was. I think that I'm hoping, because we do get that glimpse of when Jor-El sent John back to Earth, we saw Rogal Zar with Zod.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't look like Zod was chasing after Rogal Zar at all. So we now see that Zod is probably working with Rogal Zar.
Well, they probably fought, and they knew that they were fighting to a standstill, and there must have been something where we're going to end up seeing sooner or later what happened with them in the Phantom Zone. Like, that's not done. That's just, they just want you to forget. But I thought that was a very important panel. But what makes me curious about this past panel, I mean the last panel, when you see this all intergalactic stuff, I have a feeling if we're going to get kind of introduced to, or at least teased without, unless you're not reading it, you won't know, Naomi and maybe the race that she is, or at least her father is a part of. I'm curious if you'll see some kind of like a little subtle, because I mean, we see in Superman, he's pissed off when he finds about his son being aged. He just flies around, sees Mongol, and they start fighting. And then that's the same battle you see in issue 1 of Naomi. So it would be kind of in a moment like this where you're just seeing so many galaxies and it's very cosmic, as you can tell, it would be interesting. Or, I mean, I would at least like to see where there's a tease. It might not be Naomi's dad, but at least maybe part of that race where you get a little bit of a subtle hint of who can she possibly be.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. I would definitely be okay with it, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's so many questions, and we know that Naomi's going to be ending soon. Season one would be ending soon. So I'm more along the lines of, you know what, let's figure this out. Let's see exactly how this is going to go. Let's see who this character is before you kind of just stop it, and then we don't know when we see her again.
Mm-hmm.
So, Clay, tell me. Batman Who Laughs. I know you've been wanting to talk about it because you got thoughts. So what are your thoughts, man?
This is my book of the week. Hands down. My book of the week. I loved Hawkman. Hawkman has been my book of the week every single time Hawkman comes out. But this was definitely my book of the week just because so many callbacks to the most recent Black Mirror, back in 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
So, and the reason I say that is the very first page we see Robin jumping through the sky into, you know, Gotham City. This exact page is basically verbatim a page in Black Mirror.
But Dick is Batman.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's why I like it so much, is because we see Dick right here as Robin going through the sky, and it goes back to, I think it's, is it here where it says that he, yeah, so Batman is saying, you know, man, Dick used to love going through the sky,
mm-hmm.
and he always used to jump from above, and it also calls back to that when Batman is driving the Batmobile here in a second. But we get to learn a little bit about the Batman Who Laughs, a little bit more of his origin of who he is. So, of course, we saw last issue Bruce Wayne making his own crown of thorns, basically, the visor, mm-hmm. Putting it on his face and learning how, you know, he sees the world.
Yeah.
And we get to see that the Batman Who Laughs actually sees the worst in people with this visor. And, you know, Bruce is telling Alfred that this is the only way that he could beat the Batman Who Laughs. Because just like every other villain, he does a deep dive into their lifestyle. He gets to learn them, and that's how he defeats them.
Yeah.
He's doing that with the Batman Who Laughs. But because the Batman Who Laughs is always a step ahead, he needs to basically become the Batman Who Laughs. He needs to learn more about him. So he made this visor out of the nth metal that he had gotten with the whole thing with metal, that series. And Alfred is no, like, this is crazy. And Alfred actually, like, fights Bruce.
That was to me, the most powerful moment because, yes, you see Alfred is doing it because he doesn't know where Bruce can end up. But seeing the hate that comes out, and when you're talking about the dark and the worst in people, you're kind of seeing how all you've ever done is hold me back for years. And you're just a coward that has lived in our house, pretty much. And when you're seeing Alfred, like, crying. Well, first, I mean, give Alfred, I love to see that the props that you still have, kind of like Alfred still has that military in him. In terms of he could still kind of hold his own. Even though, yes, this is not tip-top Batman, but I'm sure that there's still some semblances there where he's got moves. But when you're seeing that moment where Alfred is just, you know, please, Bruce, and you see Batman end what he's saying and is like, stop. And even with those eyes, he can still see what he just did. And when they had that hug, I was like, damn, this is...
Oh, this is sad. Don't cry, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
You're a grown man, for Mark. Sure, you're 33. Don't cry in the Batman comic, please.
This, and that's the thing I love about Snyder. I just recently, like I said, read the first 20 issues of Snyder's New 52 run. The very last issue I read was, and I'm okay to spoil this because it's been 9 years since the start of that series. Damien died at one point, and so you see kind of the ramifications of what Batman is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part where Batman is... We find out that Batman records everything that he does as Batman. And he's watching the playback of the adventures him and Robin had. And there's, at the very end of one issue, both him and Alfred are sitting in the Batcave watching this, and Bruce, like, is in tears. That hit me. I was like, oh, man, that's, oh, it gets you just right here, you know? But we get to see, you know, once again, Batman Who Laughs, the Grim Knight, and Gordon all in this, you know, small little bunker that they're in. And, you know, the Batman Who Laughs is basically explaining to Alfred, you know, what's all going to happen, how he's going to lose, and how Bruce is going to lose. And he tells them, hey, if you have any funny business, the Grim Knight here, he's not your friend.
Please misbehave him. Please.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, he's okay with killing you. So if you would like to, go ahead. But I've told him not to because I still have plans. You know, that's kind of the way the Batman Who Laughs was kind of playing it off.
Yeah.
But we do get to see Bruce in his Batmobile with the visor. He's trying to see the good in everybody. That's why you see everybody like in this weird tone of blue. But every now and again, the visor takes over, the serum takes over, or really the Joker gas in Batman's bloodstream takes over. And with all of that, we see, you know, these glimpses of people being the worst that they could be. And here, that's when Batman is starting to explain that, you know, Dick and everybody else used to fly over the rooftops. Batman likes to be on the ground because, what does it say? He prefers the streets with the Batmobile.
Because he can kind of like transform his Batmobile. So he can kind of like, but it also gives him an opportunity to connect with the people that he's saving.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. I thought that was, because to him, it's not, you know, saving a person, it's just not a number on the mantle. You know, this is very, it's personal. So he wants to feel, I mean, I appreciate that sentiment. Like, I think that definitely humanizes it because it feels like it's more than just, you know, like, oh, I'm doing this to avenge what happened to my parents. Like, there's more to it. Like, that shows like a lot of, I guess you could say growth in his character. And uh-huh. That's something that I really enjoy seeing.
So here we also get to see James Gordon Jr., of course, the psychopath.
Ugh.
And he still has a connection to Batman, you know, with the earpiece or whatever, and they're communicating. And, you know, James says, you know, I know what you're feeling. I understand the stillness of your voice. I used to have that as well, or I still do have it. And he asks him, hey, if everything doesn't go according to plan, do you have a plan to stop you? And we see what had happened prior, where he goes face to face with the Joker. Mm. And they basically say, hey, what's going on with us? It's definitely the worst that Gotham has ever been. But, and I hate to say this, Joker, if anything were to happen to me, you know, you need to be the one to kill me. And Joker says it. He's like, I'm not letting anybody else kill you because that's my job.
Yeah.
And, you know, they even, you know, Joker kind of laughs and says, cross my heart. And he, like, crosses it with the blood that he still has all over him.
Yeah, he's like, cross your heart. And he's like, and I hope you die.
Yeah. And then we see a small glimpse of the Grim Knight and Gordon again, and Gordon, you know,
well, talking about that part, what I liked is that when you say the cross your heart and hope you die, you kind of get like a little subtle Killing Joke vibe where both of them are just there and they're laughing at it. And I thought, I was like, oh man, like, you know that Batman's in a really, he's in a really big spot to kind of see like a little resemblance there. But it also talks about, because the Joker in Snyder feels different than the Joker in every other incarnation that you've seen him in. So it feels like this is the Joker that many people have connected to, because Snyder has been such a big part for the last, you know, 10 years in Batman lore, that Snyder's doing more to connect the relationship between these two. That seeing like a moment like that where it's kind of like, dude, this is like something that has to be done together. But seeing like them getting the laugh, it kind of just resembles like, man, there's just been so much growth since the Joker who peels off his face and it's now stapled back on, and he's trying to kill his family because his family is taking him away from Joker. So, I don't know if you're there yet. I don't know when Death of the Family happened.
No. I just finished that one.
Okay. All right. So you're, what's after Death of the Family? Is that 0 year?
After Death of the Family, there's a 2-part story with Clayface, and I'm going into 0 year.
Best story. Okay. Anyways, so go ahead.
So here we find out that with the visor, Batman can see the spots that the Batman Who Laughs is opening to find the other Bruce Waynes. Because we know that in this story, he is playing with Bruce Wayne by bringing in other multiverse versions of Bruce Wayne and killing him, kind of sending him a message, you know, playing with him, hey, I'm going to kill you, type of thing. And so the very next one is actually opening in Blackgate. Or is it Blackgate or is it Arkham? I think it's Blackgate as well.
See, this is the thing that when I'm focusing so much on, because I focus so much on the words that sometimes I don't pay to, I'm kind of like a skimmer when it comes to art, because I'm so into what I'm reading, that these are the little things that if it said Blackgate somewhere on a corner or Arkham, I wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm. So here we also get a glimpse, like I was saying before, Grim Knight lets loose Gordon. He's like, I'm going to play with you a little bit. I couldn't, you know, what does he say? That he couldn't bring, he couldn't bring somebody, but he instead brought some other people to play, and we find out it's
the Robins
of the Dark Multiverse. So, and they're like chomping at Gordon. It almost looks like they're biting off his fingers.
Yeah, it looks like, I'm curious if that's going to be probably the one thing that I'm going to look out for when I read the next issue, because he is straight up biting like his middle finger on his right finger. So I want to see if he ends up losing it, or if that's going to be one of these little art things that, you know, they just happen to do it, but they don't show it in the next one.
So here we see Batman talk to a guard at Blackgate and telling him, hey, this is what's going on. I'm not the real Batman Who Laughs, you know, because he has the visor on or whatever. And he tells them, hey, I'm looking for this thing. Please stay with me and we'll figure out this thing together. And they end up going into that portal. They don't actually, like, he miscalculated in some sense of saying where the portal was going to be. And he actually entered the portal. You see an older Bruce Wayne, like this really old guy, and they know exactly who the Batman Who Laughs is. Mm-hmm. And so they are about to start shooting him, and this other guard is like, the one that went in with Batman, is saying, hey, you know, he pretty much closes a like gate or a piece of glass.
Yeah, it was like a divider, shield. Like a divider in between.
Yeah. Between him and Batman, and he tells them, he shows Batman who he is, and it's the Batman Who Laughs.
Mm-hmm. But now it's like you get to see him without his actual like crown of thorns, where you can kind of see where it's just a terrifying version of the Joker.
Yeah.
Just, and with those eyes, like it's just, it's like it's piercing. But Jock is, the way Jock can draw teeth is really scary.
Oh, yeah. Like with the, it's not necessarily sharp, but it's like rigid.
Yeah.
So, and you know, he masks his voice and he's like, okay, this is the Batman Who Laughs, you know, kill him on sight or whatever. And Batman turns around and there's an entire, like, firing squad just like berating him with bullets.
Yes.
And that's the end.
So
that is it. We don't see if he survived or not. So that's the cliffhanger for, you know, basically next month.
And this is a six-parter, correct?
It's a six-parter.
Yeah, so this was like when this was announced in New York Comic Con last year, it was one of the I was really happy to see it because Snyder was – it felt like he was getting back to his roots, which is only Batman and just – and like horror. Like talk something dark. Because Metal was a good story, but it was a lot to process. Mm-hmm. And I felt that in a way it was kind of getting away. Like I commend him for, you know, stretching so he's not always doing the same thing. But I don't know. It kind of like I felt like I missed the more grounded Scott Snyder. So then when this was announced and he said like, oh, I'm trying to get back to my roots. Like this is why this story means very this means a lot to me because this is something that he's been working on for such a long time and leading up to. But it allows him just to get back to where it's just the world of Batman and like what he loves, which is horror. And I was all for it, man. I thought this issue was very strong. I gotta be honest with you, this book could have been, I think it's, I have a soft spot for Hawkman because I feel like he's dying. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I feel like the more I read it, it's like one of those things, I'm gonna use a really old movie reference, but it's Little Big League. Did you ever see that movie? Baseball movie?
Oh yeah.
Little Big League?
Yeah.
I don't remember the kid's name, but when he becomes like the manager of the Twins, but he's still the owner, but it was his favorite baseball player. And his favorite baseball, I think it was like Lenny. He was just, you can tell he was washed. And, but when he finally, when they were talking to him that you got to release him and he didn't want to do it, when that next game, he gets one base hit, but it was like a crappy little single, like past the second baseman. Yeah. He's like, you see, man, he still got it. He goes, well, what does that tell you if you're getting so excited for a little measly single? And then he realized, man, this is, it's time, you know? Like, it's done. Like, we have to, like, that's where I'm kind of feeling where I read Hawkman, and in a way, I kind of just want to tell the readers, man, this is really good. You guys got to read this. But it's kind of like, I feel like it's going to deaf ears. So as crazy as this was, I still want to say that, like, my number one is Hawkman, but I think I'm doing it in, like, a more of a pity, even though it was great. Like, it deserves to be upper echelon. But I feel like I'm putting it at above this because of how I feel that this is a book that I'm slowly losing my grip on. Even though the evidence doesn't point towards it because it's still being solicited. I don't know why. I just feel maybe it's just Hawkman. You know, you just have so much history with Hawkman never succeeding that you just can't envision this one actually succeeding.
Yeah. You know, with this, I think I just thought about our question for this episode. But before we do that, rankings.
Top five.
I already said Batman Who Laughs is my number one. I'm going to go ahead and say Hawkman is my number two. Detective, my number three. Superman, my number four. And Batman, my number five.
Hawkman is number one. Batman Who Laughs is number two. Man, it's such a wash between Superman and Detective. I guess I'll just give it to Detective, Superman, and then Batman.
All right. So it's just the Batman Who Laughs and Hawkman who are switched for us. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, and so, honestly, it could have been the same thing, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my question, because we have been kind of just gushing over Hawkman recently. If this is kind of the, you know, the last we will see of Hawkman, which I know we won't. You know, I know that as of right now, I think the solicits have it up to 14 on Hawkman, I think. But if, like you said, there is going to be 20 to 24 issues of Hawkman, and, you know, we're kind of just, you know, dead air with Hawkman, not really seeing anything from him in a while. If you were to pitch, this is the question to you listeners, if you were to pitch a history of Hawkman miniseries, which Hawkman would you choose? Because right here in the Hawkman book, we have seen a lot of different reincarnations. And we now know that Hawkman does not need, it doesn't need to be in that time period. Hawkman can go to that person, like, basically right now and be that reincarnation. We've learned that through this series. So it doesn't necessarily need to be something that plays in the past, but can definitely play in the future as well as present time. So if there was ever a History of Hawkman series, which Hawkman would you choose to learn a little bit more about?
Man, can I do a pitch? I like that one. That's a good one. I want to do a pitch.
Yeah.
Mark Russell writing, but it's not so much, man, the thing is that you want to do a history. The thing is, like, I'm kind of like looking for like a tag team, because I would love to see, well, you know, I'll stick with what you're saying. I would love to see Mark Russell with the Silent Knight of Britain or Nighthawk. Because that's actually, that's the dynamic duo. I think that with a snarky kind of writer that Mark Russell is, or like a Grant Morrison that likes to do really quirky stuff, seeing like these two, because I just found them funny. Like just seeing a dude that's dressed up as a knight and he's literally jousting on his horse. And then him and then Nighthawk, who's just like a Jonah Hex, they just seem so unnecessary in this actual battle. But they're actually, I feel like they were kind of featured, that I thought it was actually funny.
Well, I think that would work, because if not a lot of people know, Hawkman was basically the star of the show whenever it came to Brave and the Bold in the very beginning.
Yeah.
When Brave and the Bold was very first introduced, it wasn't a Batman thing. It was a Hawkman thing. So a dynamic duo would definitely be okay if it was that character, you know, in that time period, put in with a character with, you know, a different DC character. I would totally be okay with that also.
Okay.
But I just want to hear, you know, with so many different Hawkmen out there, there's got to be a History of Hawkman book. There's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be so cool. I think, like, a, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 issue arc every 6 months.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Would be legitimate to me, you know? It would give each writer, if there was different writers, enough time to really build a story.
So kind of like a multiversity, but just in the world of Hawkman. Where you had like the main story, but then you had a whole bunch of the little tie-ins of what's going on in the different Earths. But in this case, it's just different versions of different incarnations. Bro, that's awesome. All right. So answer this question. And if you haven't answered the questions of our previous 3 episodes, go ahead and do that, because by the end of this month, we will be announcing a winner. And the winner will be winning a $15 Amazon gift card. And the reason for Amazon, since we are fans of comics, again, you can do it for whatever reason that you want. But our way of thinking is, you can either use it towards Comixology if you are a digital comics reader, or if there is a certain trade paperback that you want, then you can go ahead and just make that purchase, and it's on us. And, you know, and that's our way of saying thank you for you guys listening, supporting, interacting, because we love interacting with all of you. But yeah, man, this has been another fun episode, another solid Batman. This is like the episode that you would expect with like Batman 1000, like Detective Comics 1000, like very Batman heavy. But this one, you had 3 issues of Batman, and I don't think there's such a thing as too much Batman. besides that, where can they follow us, Clay? Or where can they follow you?
Well, of course, you can always follow me at Fanboy Clay. You can also follow me on Twitter with our new show that did debut on Comic Book Legion. It is at Fanboy Comics Pod for the Fanboy Comics podcast. The latest episode was with Ashley Robinson, with her story of the Aurora and the Eagle Kickstarter that is ending really soon. So please, if this comes out in time, go check out auroraandtheeagle.com and back that up. And of course, you can always follow this show at CB_Legion for the Comic Book Legion Twitter account as well. That's where, of course, we will be posting these episodes. And we plugged it in the beginning. We'll plug it now. ComicBookLegion.com. I just recently wrote a War of the Realms Marvel review. And there is tons of reviews out there right now. We have a Shazam review, the movie. We have a lot of books this week out on our site as well. And we are also looking for writers. So if you are interested in writing a review, kind of getting into this realm of comics, or, you know, just not just DC, but if you look for Image and Dark Horse and Boom Studios and things like that, please get a hold of us. You can email us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com, right?
Yep. You are right, sir.
And of course, you can also follow Mark at
Mark Fosses. That's my personal one. And I also, me and Clay, we are like, we co-handle the CB_Legion. So, I mean, you could be talking with either one of us. But with me personally, it's at Mark Fosses. I also handle the main Nation of Nerds Twitter handle, which is where the podcast network is, where we pretty much try to feature all of our articles, our episodes. And that's actually where, for the time being, that's where you can actually find the podcast, because that's where all the podcasts that are in the network, that's where the episodes are being featured. So you could check our Comic Book Legion episodes. That's where you could check out Clay's awesome interview with or chat with Ashley Robinson. And yeah, definitely check out that, you know, go ahead and support that book. But also, if you haven't, check out Jupiter Jet, because Jupiter Jet's awesome.
Yes.
So that's another really good book. And right now they've been kind of on a hiatus just because Leo's been moving, and he moved to Tampa. But we still do have the Coolest Podcast Show, so all of these shows are in there. So go ahead, just subscribe to the Nation of Nerds podcast on anywhere where you can find podcasts, and that's where you can find all the episodes. Besides that, man, let's wrap things up. You have anything else to say, Clay?
Nope, I think we're good to go.
Then we will talk with y'all next week. See ya.
All right.